We learn a lot from the lives we see led in public. We get a clearer sense about what to do and what not to do. We make a study both of cultural heroes and cautionary tales, and we believe we have a firm grasp of who is who and pick our favorites accordingly. So it can be particularly instructive when people become crossover figures and openly admit their defeats as well as their triumphs, because all of us have a mixture of those two in our personal experiences, though we are sometimes reluctant to admit the balance of them. It's tough for any of us to admit the times when our choices or behaviors have been self-defeating. Usually, when we speak of forgiveness, we frame it as a social interaction between two parties, the transgressed and the transgressor reaching a truce. But what happens when there is only one solitary party and forgiveness becomes an internal negotiation instead? How do we forgive ourselves? And why should we? And who are we to ever not? One legendary crossover figure is the late Maya Angelou, professor, poet, patriot. Dr. Angelou came to national prominence as our first African-American inaugural poet, reading her poem, On the Pulse of Mourning, as President Clinton was sworn into office. Later, she would receive the Presidential Medal of Honor of Freedom from President Obama a few years prior to her death. When she died, we collectively acknowledge the loss of a national treasure. But the freedom Dr. Angelou enjoyed, she had earned at a dear price. Raised in the Jim Crow South, in poor and desperate circumstances, she became active in the civil rights movement, joining with other African American writers in telling hard truths about our history. Some of the hardest truths implicated those closest to her, and some involved her own true confessions. In a series of memoirs, Dr. Angelou put them all out in the public record for our consideration. Before she came to prominence, Maya Angelou's name was Marguerite Ann Johnson. In a touching letter she wrote to her younger self, Dr. Angelou said, "Dear Marguerite, don't let anybody raise you. You've been raised. You know right from wrong. Be courageous, but not foolhardy. Walk proud as you are." But she made decisions earlier in life that would wound her pride. She became involved in the drug trade and sex work and illegal activity. She struggled to come into her own and claim the identity she preferred, the one that would later garner her laurels for her accomplishments. What I learned to do many years ago was to forgive myself. It is very important for every human being to forgive herself or himself, because if you live, you will make mistakes. It is inevitable, Dr. Angelou told an interviewer. But once you see the mistake, then you can forgive yourself and say, "Well, if I'd known better, I'd have done better. That's all." If we hold on to the mistake, she explained, we can't see our own glory in the mirror because we have the mistake between our faces in the mirror. We can't see what we're capable of being. You can ask forgiveness of others, she added, but in the end, the real forgiveness is in one's own self. If we don't have that, we never grow, we never learn, and we sure as hell should never teach. Later in her career, Dr. Angelou characterized herself as a teacher who wrote. She wrote about what she had learned from life, through life, about life, from a vantage of greater glory, as she put it, confident in what she had been capable of becoming all along. Telling the unapologetic truth about her personal evolution was an act of bravery. As she said, she had been raised with a strong set of values. She did know right from wrong, but in corrupting circumstances, it became tricky for her to keep true to her prior commitments. When I recall times when I have felt hardest pressed to forgive myself, I recognize that they have occurred in those gaps between my past, present, and future selves. Sometimes the high expectations I set for myself were not fulfilled. Other times my future self seemed an impossible ideal that I would never embody. If the distances felt too far, I was in danger of getting paralyzed and halting any and all progress. Passing phrases wrongly became permanent states in my mind, and I lodged categorical accusations against myself that included the words like never and always. My judgments against myself could be uncharitable, unkind. Whatever errors I made appeared somehow eternally damning. Once, in a fit of self-recrimination, I made a series of self-disparaging remarks in front of my dear friend and close neighbor. "Hey," she said, "don't talk about my friend that way. I don't like it." Her comment had its intended effect. It was arresting. I stopped and reconsidered my mindset. She sounded the right note. I was not someone who was unforgivable. I was simply someone who was being unforgiving. Whenever we refuse to forgive, whether we refuse to forgive a life partner or close friend or family member or work colleague, or indeed ourselves, we forfeit the promise of peace. In recent years, researchers have reported the physical, mental, and emotional costs of unforgiveness. They are considerable. They are damaging to mind, body, spirit. As complicated a task as self-forgiveness might be, it is imperative that we master it, especially as we age, because the longer we live, the more we will have to forgive ourselves in time. While self-forgiveness is a process, sometimes an arduous one, it gets easier the more we practice it, so we ought not to delay. It begins when we cease making the case for the prosecution and begin making a case for the defense, when we show up as friendly witnesses instead of hostile ones. We start to soften if we just place some store in the potential every last one of us has to learn from our failures. Most of us are quite willing to be schooled in life, and the mistakes we have made before are not usually ones we're inclined to repeat. We can let ourselves off with a warning and waive some of the stiffer penalties. We don't have to draft incriminating testimony against ourselves. So what happens when we start arguing on our own behalf? We connect to our strengths and finally give ourselves the option of being free to get things right. In a letter she wrote to her imaginary daughter, Dr. Angelou recorded the questions she often asks herself in the aftermath of misfortune. Did I learn to be kinder, to be more patient and more generous, more loving, more ready to laugh, and more easy to accept honest tears? Essentially, she asked if she had remained educable through it all. Because she considered herself a teacher, that remained her highest intention. According to Dr. Angelou, life loves the liver of it. You must live and life will be good to you. Our painful experiences will tutor us on what not to do again. Regret is supremely instructive. We can learn a lesson and continue on through the lifelong curriculum, which is usually a pretty ambitious one. In the midst of this worldwide coronavirus crisis, I am conscious that none of us gets to choose our lesson plans. Several of you have questions about what sort of friend, sibling, spouse, parent, neighbor, employee, employer, citizen, or volunteer you should be at this time. And strangely, those roles might feel like competing ones at moments. I cannot provide you any pat answers to your sincere questions. I doubt any exist. Honestly, I am wrestling with similar questions myself, wondering what sort of minister I need to be now. Each of us is worried about what is to come and how we might best respond to it. We seldom do our best thinking under duress, yet I trust our answers will become better known as this crisis continues. Today, I encourage you all to forgive yourselves any confusion you might be experiencing, and to try and correct and change whatever is most immediately distressing for you if you can. I urge each of you to be a friendly witness to what is unfolding in your household, neighborhood, county, state, country, as well as to what is unfolding within yourself, in your spirit, and in your very soul. It is sad but true that sometimes we need tragedy to help us to see how human we are and how we are more alike than different, Dr. Angelou contended. Early tragedies made deep impressions in her life. Following her parents' divorce, she was sent to live with a grandmother in segregated Arkansas. As a child, she was raped by a family acquaintance, and when she reported to their family, they killed the man for his crime. That trauma left her speechless, actually mute, for 5 crucial years in her development. Dr. Angelou paradoxically maintains that muteness saved her because it allowed her to tap an inner wisdom, heal herself, and discover what it was she had to tell the world. She eventually decided it might be necessary to confront defeat. It might be necessary to get over it, all the way through it, and go on. When we forgive others and ourselves, we are granting permission to go on to whatever is next. When we release ourselves from guilt and anger and shame and embarrassment, we allow grace and, yes, even glory as distinct possibilities. Research into the psychology of forgiveness has shown that people who identify as religious are more likely to forgive others, while people who identify as spiritual are more likely to forgive themselves. In the days to come, we will all need to be spiritual as well as religious. The late theologian Reinhold Niebuhr famously proclaimed, "Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime." So our best prospects are realized in hope, faith, and love. Forgiveness merely returns us to them and to one another in the fullest way. Make no mistake, it is a faithful practice to forgive ourselves. We are deserving of it. We can refuse to be either unforgivable or unforgiving people. We can choose to live more humanely. Blessed be the life that comforts, sustains, and upholds us, the Reverend Ken Sawyer proclaimed. And blessed be we who do, now and then, awaken to its grace. In order to waken to a new day, to truly feel its pulse, we need to keep our senses alert and to hold our hearts, hands, and minds open. We can simultaneously attend to the tragic as well as the beautiful. And ultimately we must, because the only grace we have to extend to others is that which we have known most intimately. We can never teach a forgiveness we have not learned. What Dr. Angelou did in her remarkable generosity and audacious honesty was treat herself as an object lesson. We may never be public figures. We may never find ourselves addressing throngs of Americans on the National Mall some inauguration day. But my guess is that people closest to us are making a surreptitious study of our lives, nevertheless. So we ought to as well. If we really heed our own cautionary tales, we can eventually become the heroes of our own stories. We can become so much more than the sum of our worst decisions and actions. We can become someone infinitely more imaginative. We can always begin again, freer and wiser than before. You're all forgivable. Believe that.